A reading from the Gospel of Luke, the 7th chapter. After Jesus had finished all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. A centurion there had a slave whom he valued highly and who was ill and close to death. When he heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders to him, asking him to come and heal his slave. When they came to Jesus, they appealed to him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people, and it is he who built our synagogue for us." And Jesus went with them. But when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him to say, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but only speak the word, and let my servant be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, with soldiers under me, and I say to one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'Do this,' and the slave does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning to the crowd that followed him, he said, "I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith." When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you,
Lord Christ. I invite you to be seated. How can we be a person of peace in unpeaceful times? That's the question that we've been asking all this month. And today we're thinking about how can we be a person of peace in our community, in our immediate surroundings, with those people that we interact with and see every day. But before we get too far into our gospel story this morning, I want us to take a step back and think about this word, peace. The word that Jesus would have used is a word, shalom, right? We're probably familiar with this. We've probably heard this before, if not actually seen it in Hebrew. And remember, it's backwards in Hebrew, so you got to read it the other direction. But this idea of shalom is bigger than just what we normally think of as peace, right? We hear peace and we think, well, we shouldn't hit people. We shouldn't be violent people. But shalom is deeper than that. When we look through the Hebrew scriptures and through the Hebrew traditions, shalom has a meaning of wholeness, completeness, of being made well, of being renewed, and being redeemed even. There's a depth to this meaning that encompasses so much more than simply not being violent. And it's in this deep rooting of shalom that we start to ask this question: how can I be a person of peace in our community? Because the fact of the matter is, the truth of the matter is that my peace, my wholeness is impossible without you. That I cannot be complete without my neighbor. I cannot be whole and at peace. I cannot have shalom without you. And so to be at peace in our community, we need one another. We depend on one another. So with that as our understanding of what peace in the community needs to look like, we can dive into our story today. And it's an interesting story, isn't it? One that might throw us for a loop if we're not familiar with this sort of thing. And so we'll break it down from the start, right? We've got this centurion, a Roman soldier who would have had 100 men under him, right? Think century, centurion, right? That goes together. So you've got 100 men who serve underneath this Roman soldier. And so he would have had some wealth, some moderate means, some sort of income. He would have been doing pretty well for himself. And this Roman centurion has a slave who was ill. And we hear that the centurion valued this slave highly. He thought very highly of him, and so he wanted him to be made well. And so he sends Jewish elders from this village of Capernaum to Jesus. He doesn't send religious leaders. He doesn't send an armed guard, which he certainly could have done. He sends the village elders, these people who had walked with Jesus, who probably had been following Jesus, who were seen as respected and wise people within the community. And they come to Jesus and they say, you know what, Jesus, not only are we going to make this request, but we're going to add on to this request and clarify that this centurion deserves to have you do this. He's worthy of this because he loves our people and he's built our synagogue for us. He's worthy to have you do this. Now, right there, let's pause for a moment because there's a couple things that are really odd about this story, right? First and foremost, we have a Roman centurion asking a traveling Jewish rabbi for help. That in and of itself should strike us as strange, because if we know anything about the Roman culture, especially back in this time, Rome thought they were the height of civilization. There was nothing better than Rome. And so while they might have enjoyed entertaining themselves with their foreign cultures when they conquered another country, they certainly would not take on the pieces that came out of that culture. They'd be entertained by them, perhaps bring them to Rome to put them on display, but still, Rome was the height of civilization. And so for this centurion to then ask this Jewish rabbi for help to heal his slave, he's putting himself, his reputation, at risk. He's opening up the possibility that if Jesus can't heal his slave, people can find out that he didn't trust in the powers of Rome. He put his trust in some foreign, petty culture, and now, does he have any respect? Will his men respect him when they go into battle? Will he have the same position that he had before? The centurion puts himself at risk by inviting Jesus to come and heal his slave. So that's the first thing that's strange about this story. The second thing is that the Jewish elders support this centurion. Everywhere else we look in the Gospels or throughout Scripture, frankly, Rome is pretty much seen as the enemy, right? The disciples don't like Rome. The crowds don't like Rome. Rome is an occupying force. The Jewish people are not big fans of these Roman soldiers who have come in and taken their land and forced them into this sort of living in the Roman way. They don't like Rome. And yet these Jewish elders have said, this man, not all of Rome, but this man is worthy of having you do this because he loves our people, because he built our synagogue for us. Right there, from the very start of the story, before Jesus has even entered the picture, we're given an image of a community striving to live in peace and wholeness with one another. The centurion and the elders of the village had plenty of things that they could have disagreed on, but they decide to put that aside and to work towards peace and wholeness with one another. Now Jesus enters the image. He's talked to the elders. They've said, this is what we've seen. This is why he's worthy. And Jesus has a choice, right? There's plenty of things that Jesus could critique and discipline the Roman soldier, the Roman centurion for, right? You know, slavery would probably be one. Wealth and power, oppression of another people, putting other gods before God. All these things that the centurion likely does, Jesus could have critiqued and disciplined him for and said, no way, I'm not going there. He could have turned to the Jewish elders and say, you have sold out your people and sold out your God by turning and supporting this centurion, so I'm not going to help you either. He could have done that. But instead, Jesus moves into this story with an unspoken assumption, an assumption that both parties are doing the best they can with what they have and have the best of intentions. Does this sound familiar to any of you? I haven't been here for a couple weeks, so I went back and listened to the sermons from the past 2 weeks, and Pastor Gary, when he was talking about having peace in our families, talked about assuming that other families are doing the best they can, starting with that as our grounding for understanding how to be at peace with our family. And then last week, Tammy was preaching and was talking about how we need to assume when we're in work, when we're having peace in our workplace, we need to assume that others have the best of intentions. We start from that place of assuming that people are doing the best they can. And we get that same image to come up again this week. where Jesus displays for each of us how to start with the assumption. Start with the assumption that we're doing the best we can and go from there. Too often in our world, we start from a place of the things that divide us. We start from a place of saying, well, they voted for so-and-so, so they must be up to no good. We start from a place of saying, oh, they have all sorts of money, or they have no money at all, so I can't possibly believe that they're going to be able to do that. Or we start from a place of saying, well, our religious beliefs aren't exactly aligned, so I can't possibly believe that we could work together. We start from a place of saying, they have everything, they have nothing, they have this degree, they have that degree, they work for this company, I can't possibly trust them. And yet the model that Jesus gives us today is to put all those little differences aside and start from a place of assuming that they have the best of intentions, that through the power of God, all of those differences can be washed away and we can work together to build community, to build peace, to give ourselves and to give them an opportunity for wholeness, for shalom. Now, this past week, I was in outside of Seattle with our high school youth group, and we're on a mission trip there, and we had 45 of our youth each buddied up with an adult with special needs for the week. It was an incredible experience. I could not be prouder of the 45 youth who were with us. We're going to have a special service in 2 weeks, so I encourage you to come and hear their stories and hear how that impacted their life. But I want to tell you a little bit about my experience, because while they did such an incredible job working with their buddies with special needs all week long, I really struggled. Because I too was put with a buddy. And so myself and one of our high schoolers were working with a young man named Noah. And Noah was 20 years old and had severe autism. And as a part of his autism, he was unable to communicate with us at all. Couldn't speak. Couldn't use sign language, couldn't write things down, barely even could nod his head yes or no to answer a question, right? Had no way of communicating with us. And so I and my high school buddy and Noah spent our week trying to figure out how to get along together, how to exist together, how to support Noah. I spent all week trying to figure out how to be a person of peace for Noah. And the only thing that we figured out by the end of the week was that when Noah was really relaxed and content, he would kick off his shoe with the intention of you putting it back on. And would do this like multiple times in the course of like 5 minutes. He'd kick it off 4 or 5 times, just to, as if he's playing a game with you, to have you put his shoe back on. That's the only thing that we figured out all week long. You know, we couldn't figure out when he always wanted to go swimming or when he wanted to go to play mini golf. We couldn't figure out when he wanted to be with a group or when he wanted to be by himself. We were struggling every step of the way. And all along, all we wanted to do was be a person of peace for Noah. And then it occurred to me as I was thinking about this story that we heard today, as I was thinking about this message that we're going to have this morning, as I'm reflecting back on my week, that I had it all backwards. Because I wasn't there to be a person of peace for Noah. I wasn't there to be the teacher for Noah. I was there to be the student. And all week long, Noah was showing me how to be a person of peace. Because all week long, Noah couldn't communicate with me and had to put up with me asking question after question, taking him to the wrong place when he didn't want to go there, asking him to do this when he wanted to do that, saying let's color when he wanted to go run, saying let's sit still when he wanted to go play, saying let's go sing with the rest of the group when he wants to be nowhere near anyone else. He had to put up with me and all my failings and shortcomings as a buddy. And all along the way, Noah trusted me. Noah was mobile enough that he could have run away from me if he wanted to. He could have hit me and pushed me and gotten away from me. He could have stayed in the van and refused to get out so that his mother wouldn't want to drop him off on the second day. But Noah did none of that. Noah kept showing up, kept sitting next to me, kept kicking off his shoe, kept reminding me that part of being a person of peace in the community is knowing that other people are going to mess up, but trusting that they're doing their best, that they have the best of intentions. And so as we think about this story, as we remember the story that Jesus has told us this morning, we all find ourselves in places where we are in that same spot, where we have an opportunity to judge someone, to place someone before we ever know what their intentions or their abilities were. We could show up to the PTO meeting already on fire about whatever debacle happened at the parent-teacher night, or we could show up with an open mind to hear what happened and how we could help make it better. We could judge the single parent in the checkout line who can't control their three kids, or we could remember that parenting is really hard, especially when you're doing it on your own, and we could offer to push their cart to the car, or even just say, have a nice day. We might even know what it feels like for Noah to be in a place where we feel like we're in a world where no matter what we do, no one understands us. No one can understand what we're trying to communicate, what we're trying to convey, and we try, but people just don't get it. But we keep showing up. We keep putting ourselves out there because someone else might just need to learn how to be a person of peace from you. That's what we can take away from this story. There's an opportunity to be people of peace in our community by putting ourselves out there and trusting that other people have the best of intentions. We start from that place because that is exactly how God starts with each of us. God knows our intentions. God knows what we're going to do, and yet God says, I will put my trust in you and I will give you peace. And we get to live that peace out into the world. It's not peace that we make up ourselves. It's the peace that we first have received from God, poured out again and again to every person that we meet. So that whether we're out healing the centurion's servant or we're simply trying to bear with some pastor from Texas who can't figure out how to put my shoes on, whatever it is that we are dealing with, we have an opportunity to be people of peace. Now, it would be easier to just run off into the woods and look for peace on our own, because people are complicated and people are going to get it wrong. And people are going to hurt us. And so it would be easier to look for it out all by ourselves, find nature and a tree and a breeze and say, oh, this is peace. But no one ever said peace would be easy. We just said that peace is what we need. And true peace, wholeness, healing, renewal and redemption, true shalom is always found in community. So don't run from it. Embrace the opportunity to be together, to see that God has called us to be greater together than we ever could be on our own. Even if it's as simple as putting a shoe back on a foot. God loves each of you, and I do too. Amen.